Are you sick and tired of demand generation bullshit? Have you had enough of theoretical advice impossible to implement? Are you done with these so-called demand generation influencers? In this podcast, we interview marketing leaders and excellent practitioners to give you real advice that you can implement today.
Welcome to Driving Demand.
Okay, welcome to another episode of Driving Demand. And with me today, I have Julia Olenikova, the head of marketing at Enrich. Welcome, Julia.
Hi, Adam. Hi. Happy to be here.
Finally, right. We've had a couple of weeks with sick kids and so on, but that's the life of a parent these days. It's really, really nice. But before we jump into today's topic, can you tell us a little bit about Enrich, what you do and kind of how that journey got started and when it was?
So I am head of marketing at Enrich, and I joined back in 2021, first as a part-time worker, and I was helping with some product marketing tasks, let's say so. But then, actually, since 2022, I've been the only marketer at Enrich, so I could call myself head of marketing since 2022, but I was the team of one. Sometimes quite hard to manage, to be honest, as we all know. So yeah, that there was just myself and a couple of freelancers and agencies. And to give you some context, prior to joining Enrich, I spent 5 years at Semrush, Semrush. It's a big organization, but when I joined back in 2015, it was maybe 80 people, maybe even less, but 20 of them were the marketing team. Yeah. So from the very beginning, it was a very product-led and very marketing-led organization. It has always relied on marketing big time. And then I joined Enrich and jumped straight away to a very sales-led organization. And it took me several months, and honestly, I would say about a year, to actually get my head around this, how differently a sales-led organization works. So there was an outbound motion set quite well, very well organized. And also, Enrich is different in terms of it is a higher ACV, it is longer sales cycle. There is no product led motion. There is no self serve options on the website. So it is naturally sales led. And I was it was a really interesting situation I found myself in, that I had to get used to this. So marketing in this type of organizations that mostly heavily rely on outbound and the sales process is in the center of everything. On one hand, you are quite limited, but on the other hand, you have a lot of freedom in experimentation, because a good sales organization, and I think at Enrich we have a good sales organization, is always open to marketing suggesting some experiments and some new techniques, new approaches, new ways to collaborate, to work together. Because every sales organization is basically interested in marketing supporting and working on more awareness, more content, more sales enablement things, because ultimately this is what benefits everyone. So since 2023, we actually realized that the existing setup of, let's say, a lot of pipeline being generated just by outbound and the marketing support being very basic, just creating some content and generating some leads mainly through traditional channels like Google search. We had overgrown this clearly, and we need to actually take the next step. And this is how we thought that, okay, we are an ABM provider. Let's do ABM for ourselves. That's how it started.
It's a good thing, right? You're an ABM provider. Let's do what we preach.
Yeah, exactly. And well, actually, I don't know, is it just me or this is actually typical for many organizations, but I worked for companies that like they do some software and like they don't have the organizational structure that is beneficial for using this exact software. So Semrush, one of the biggest SEO tools, I guess they didn't have the like the dedicated SEO team for maybe the first 10 years of their existence. So that's
funny.
I guess
that's funny. Actually.
I guess that's pretty normal.
You always believe like these companies are the best in like Semrush. They are the best in SEO also internally, and like it's funny.
Yeah. Well, but the SEO at Semrush was actually very strong. We Semrush had like a huge bunch of organic traffic, but there was no dedicated SEO team until a certain moment.
Yeah. And before we jump into your actual program that you have developed now for ABM, would you say you need a certain ACV for ABM to be, you know, a tactic you use? Do you need to climb up those ACV dollars to use ABM, or what would you say?
I would say yes, because, it is about spending quite a lot of resources of marketing and sales on this account-based motion. So this should actually pay off. So I would say it depends on the industry, on the organization, on the amount of resources they are actually ready to invest. But anything under 10K ACV, I would really think twice.
Yeah.
If the organization really needs ABM now at this stage, but again, there are now many different opinions, maybe many different views on what ABM actually is.
Yeah.
Is it that highly tailored strategic enterprise approach when you just pick, I don't know, 20 accounts or 50 accounts? And you do the surround sound of highly, highly tailored experience, or is it actually the entire, like the way to build your entire go-to-market motion when you have 3,000 accounts, I don't know, 40,000 accounts, and you just work on the categorization, on the tiering, and you just do the entire marketing from the account based perspective. So you don't think visits, you don't think leads, you don't think any of those metrics, you think accounts. So
I think that was the traditional way of seeing it, maybe, that ABM, that was when you were targeting enterprise companies only. And maybe that is changing a bit now, which is cool, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Well, ABM is not now... it is not something that only big enterprises can afford. And I think it's really cool. I had a post on LinkedIn once that like you need to, you can actually do ABM for 3,000 accounts at once. Mm. And there was someone commenting that you are devaluing ABM in this way. Mm. And my thought is, no, actually, I think those who think of ABM as a very niche approach, they are devaluing it, because you can apply those account-based strategies, account-based way of thinking to a much wider range of strategies and tactics.
Yeah, I so much agree. And it's more the mindset of how you are thinking about it, I think, also. Like if you are thinking in an account-based way or if you're just thinking volume. So I think I like that. But if we go into, you talked about the organization was very sales-led, got a lot of things from outbound and maybe more traditional channels. How did you start then? What happened after that when you decided we want to build out an ABM program? How did you start?
Yeah, well, so we had, of course, an unfair advantage, which is our own platform. Not everyone has it. We have our own platform that has the capacity of building account lists of surfacing intent data, running account-based advertising campaigns. So, I mean, we had this, and this is just for the understanding that this is what we started with. And also, of course, our we had a total support and buy-in and from the CEO, which is not always the case. But Marcus, our CEO, was the main stakeholder and the main person who kept pushing for this change. So yeah, that's basically what we started with. And so the first thing that we honestly we thought it would take, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks or maybe 3 weeks maximum. And we are still here after almost 9 months. Was actually figuring out the account list to work on jointly. And I would say that's the first thing you need to have in place. You need to start working on. And it's actually a never ending story. You need to have this joint list of accounts, this joint scope of accounts that both, well, actually not only both marketing and sales, but also operations, also account managers, and also CS to some extent are working on. Yep. And that's much harder in practice than it looks from the beginning.
Yeah. And did you redefine your ICP in this work, or how did that work?
Yeah, well, ICP is a really living thing in our case. So we keep revising it on a quarterly basis. And we are lucky to have the RevOps person who was actually stopping us from doing it more often because it's always let's test also this parameter. Let's also add this one. Yeah. And you always need to have someone who is able to manage this chaos because a lot of people are involved. A lot of people have brilliant ideas they want implemented right now. So what we came to eventually was having ICP revisions on a quarterly basis. We would add some parameters, we would remove some parameters. It is fine to start with very basic definitions. So there is no definition, in my opinion, of bad ICP, good ICP, perfect ICP. As soon as you progress, and maybe you start with just geographic locations plus company size plus industry, this is fine. Then when you start getting data that prove or don't prove that your choice is right, you will refine it. And it is a work that is done step by step.
So then you aligned around certain account lists and you refined your ICP a bit. But how did you work towards, how many accounts did you work towards? Did you tier them in any way, or how does that work for you?
Yeah, so we actually started by categorizing those accounts by the main, aspects for us, that this was the location, the industry, and, headcount. Not really, but yeah, the location and the industry. Because, for example, for European accounts, we want to highlight that we are a European platform. We are the only ABM platform that is headquartered in Europe and featured, for example, on Gartner. All the major players are in the US. And for European accounts, we want to talk about this. But for the US audience, I wouldn't say it really matters.
So no, exactly. They would be we don't care.
Yeah. Well, some of them who are expanding to Europe, opening operations in Europe are
that's
interested.
True.
But it's usually happening the other way around, that the European company wants to expand in the US.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, let's see in the next 2 or 3 years what's going to happen with all the madness in the US. But at the moment, it's like that. So we categorized those accounts according to the value propositions that could be relevant for those segments. And based on this, we actually started building the strategy for each of those segments. Now, the next step for us is also the prioritization according to tiers, what would be the accounts that we want to actually surround with some very customized, let's say, tactics. And what are the accounts that we want to like to apply, let's say, moderate personalization for. But yeah, that's something that we are working on now.
Before we continue this episode, I want to tell you about one of today's sponsors, Enrich. During last year, every single conversation within tech has been about the macro environment. Companies are looking to be more cost efficient while growing. Companies are looking to spend their marketing dollars wisely. And companies are more and more looking into ABM to solve this. But the ABM can be really, really daunting, which is why I'm so happy to partner with a European company that collects everything you need for a successful ABM program under one umbrella. ICP creation, intent data, audience builder, ABM advertising, they have it all. So have you just started or are looking to do more ABM in 2023? They are right now offering free ABM diagnostics to set your program up for success. You'll find the link in the description. And now, back to the episode.
But that's a cool one. So starting out, it was more, okay, the value props, and then it was more maybe Europe and then US value props towards those different ones. And now after that, segmenting down, of course, into more personalization. But I like that. So the account-based approach in the beginning then is more based on region here, and it doesn't have to be super personal straight away. So it's more, yeah, I like that. And when you did that and when you have done that now, to actually start planning for like campaigns, how have that worked out compared to before?
So yeah, campaign planning and execution was the next step. And as I said, we have our own account-based platform, so we can actually test and run those tests quite quickly. And we have some room for experimentation. So we started actually on Enrich by running the account-based campaigns for different stages. So the first layer was generating awareness, getting ourselves in front of the target accounts, seeing what are the assets, what are the content pieces that resonate the most with them. And this is like the normal optimization work for pretty much every advertising campaign, that you see that this particular article is generating more, this doesn't generate anything, so you just remove it, and so on. This was as we had quite a big scope of accounts we worked with, this was the step number one. Then as we managed to surface some intent signals, we started seeing that, okay, those companies are actually coming to our website. We can see them. They are interacting with our ads. They are reading the articles. They are watching the video. That they are clicking the banners. And not only accidentally clicking the banners, but actually interacting with them. This is important. We have always told this, that I don't know, like you got one banner click, don't be so excited.
Yeah, exactly.
So when accounts were reaching a certain threshold of intent, they would be moved to the next stage. Is it in market, is it engaged, is it hot? And then you want already to show them different type of content. So it's not only about awareness. It's not only about introducing your company to them so that they get familiarized with your core offer, with your logo, with your visual and things like that. But you actually want to drive them to the website and to also get in touch with you, schedule a demo, schedule a talk. Why not?
Yeah.
In general, and I think a lot of people are talking about this, I am against those, let's say, fantasy funnels that you think that your target account, that your target person would go in market and would decide to buy because you decided that you want them to buy.
It
doesn't work like this. It can happen within a year, in like pretty much any period of time, because you cannot control when the contract from the previous vendor expires, for example. So it is fine to actually show the call to action for a demo, for example, at every moment of their journey. And also at this stage, we would also involve LinkedIn ads. So we were not using LinkedIn ads for the entire scope of accounts from day one. Mm. We only were adding LinkedIn ads for the accounts that were demonstrating some intent already through Enreach.
Yeah.
And this is what a lot of our clients are also doing. This helps save some funds, let's say, for generating this intent in the cold layer. And then you are sending accounts that you know they are already interested in you, or not in you, but at least in the in your category, in your topic. Yeah.
So in the beginning, it was more display ads then. And then when they showed intent, it turned into LinkedIn ads and...
Yeah. And on LinkedIn, you can also layer on top of this, you can also layer the job titles.
Yeah.
So you know, with LinkedIn, you will control both the accounts that you are showing your content to and the job titles.
Yeah.
And that's that's the best thing you can have as a B2B marketer, I guess.
No, and I like that because LinkedIn ads is generally super expensive, right? So if you can...
Exactly.
If you can, at least if you don't have, insane amount of money to be able to niche that down to focus only on companies that have shown intent, that's great, right? Because then you don't have to spend as much money to get them actually in that funnel, so to say.
Exactly.
But it's really cool. And okay, so that was a bit about how you think about setting up campaigns and stuff then, but how do you measure success then in this kind of project?
Yeah, well, that's a controversial topic. And that's something that we saw with our own customers. And that's something that we knew from day one that it's a long game. It's really a long-term thing. And there is the temptation, let's say so, to go back in a month and say, okay, where are the form fields? Where are the leads? I just see that they are visiting my website, that they are interacting with our creatives.
Yeah.
Why aren't they yet in our CRM begging for a demo?
Yeah.
That's
classic.
I had a post on LinkedIn which was about the curve of excitement about ABM. And in the beginning, in the first month, it is super high and everyone is so excited that they are finally working together, marketing and sales. They are finally targeting the same accounts.
Yep.
And they come up with creative ideas, insane ideas for campaigns. Then one month and a half, 2 months, where are the leads?
Yeah, exactly.
And then the level of excitement starts really, really dropping. And everyone starts running around and saying, okay, ABM is cool. This is all good. But we have our targets. We we need to hit our quota by the end of the month, end of the quarter. Let's look for some other options. And that's the time where people actually go back to this good old Google search and all those channels that they know are not working perfectly and working less and less for them, but still you can squeeze out something. And and that's where ABM usually goes in the background.
Yeah.
And someone is doing something, and as long as you don't have the champion for this initiative in the organization, it really kind of runs itself in the background.
Yeah.
But then what happens after maybe 9 months or a year or even earlier, someone actually stumbles upon, I don't know, a dashboard they had built like a while ago, or just goes to the to some analytics tool, and they see, wow, actually, do you remember we had this list of accounts? We actually get this and this account get in touch with us, I don't know, yep. 4 months after, 5 months after. Then we had this account mentioning that they saw us on LinkedIn. They interacted with us in the event that we had as part of the ABM strategy. Mm. And the level of excitement starts raising again. And it's like, oh, well, actually, ABM does work.
Yeah.
Let's give it one more boost. And you get and you repeat the cycle. So.
And I think that's funny, because it's like when you have an ACV of above $10,000, then how can you expect a company to see your ads and come in the door after a month? No, you can't, right? But most people
exactly.
do. That's not how it works.
Yeah. Well, actually, I would say this is a big luck when in the very beginning you are able to surface some, say, low-hanging fruits. Then this level of excitement keeps staying relatively high for more time. it's not always like this. So getting back to metrics, in the first 3 months, I would say that it is crucial to just observe the dynamics of your target accounts, how they are progressing in the level of engagement and level of interaction with your company. So how many more of your ideal target accounts started visiting your website? How many more requests about your product you start noticing in, I don't know, in communities here and there on social media? Like that, those are the indicators, the early indicators that don't have to do yet nothing with the pipeline, but those are super important. Those will tell you that you are moving in the right direction. And only after month 3, month 4, also depends on your sales cycle. For example, if in your industry, a typical contract length is 2 years, then there is nothing you can do about it. You can wait for 2 years, even 3 years. And that's that will be the time when some of your target accounts actually decide to get in touch with you.
I like that. It's more, we have these leading metrics, of course, and then maybe more lagging metrics that comes after a while. Makes sense. That's really good. So then we have kind of learned a bit how your organization was set up before you started out, what you focused on in the beginning, how you've kind of tiered your audience list and what you're working on now, and then kind of campaigns and metrics. So it's really valuable. But before we kind of end this episode, I would like to know one thing you are looking forward to do now in 2024. It could be a new tactic you want to try out. It could be a new campaign you want to do. Anything new you're trying out now in 2024.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I would say that we now achieved a sufficient level of marketing and sales alignment, and the marketing team is also growing. Also, because we saw that contribution of marketing can be so much more than just throwing leads over the fence, and sales would do something with them. My plans for 2024 is to blend sales and marketing even more. So sales is still a bigger function than marketing at Enrich. Mm. So why don't we actually involve them in growing awareness more?
Yep.
And also the rest of the leadership team. So I will advocate, I am already advocating big time for all the team to be involved into social selling. This should not be only on marketing's shoulders. Yep. I will die on this hill. So yeah, that's something that we will involve. We are going to involve the sales team, the leadership, the CEO. Hi, Marcus. I will reach out to you again. much more in 2024. Also, because I see that this is a channel that so far for us had the best ROI in terms of actually the best ROI. So when you post, you have your point of view,
yep.
You are able to attract with your content, with your point of view, some companies, some buyers that you don't need to sell on your vision. They yep. already come ready. They already come prepared and aware of this, and they are fine with this.
Yeah, exactly.
And then the sales cycle goes drops significantly. It becomes really, really much shorter.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's I would say the main initiative that I think we will concentrate. And also, you can actually do this with the ABM approach, especially on LinkedIn. So you can have this list of accounts that you want to be exposed to with your POV, with your content. So nothing prevents you from actually going and adding the decision makers of those accounts as part of your network. And you don't sell them anything. You don't break into their emails saying, hey, do you want to schedule a demo? You're just here with your POV, with your content, with your how-tos, with your value that you can provide.
Yeah.
And that's what builds this mental availability everyone is talking about so much.
No, I really like that. I think that's really a good approach also in 2024 to do more with less. Like, social selling is something that obviously will cost time and resources, but not actual money. Which I also like. People, like any company, could do it as long as they spend time and resources, which is really nice.
But exactly.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Julia.
okay, yeah. thank you. It was a pleasure.
Cool. And see you soon.
See you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Driving Demand. Are you ready to learn more and share knowledge with some of the best B2B marketers in the world? Join our community on drivingdemand.io. See you next time.